No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. And if you have a question, you can call in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us a question at bbsradio.com. Tonight, because it's Veterans Day, of course, we have two Washington veterans with us, which are two men that I know personally. They're great guys. The first one is V. Hector Rodriguez, who arrived in Washington in 1968 after completion of service as a Vietnam-era captain in the United States Army Strategic Command. And the other one is James Sidnor, who was with the Primary Operations Security Staff Officer for Policies and Directives across the Marine Corps. James is currently a member of the D.C. Veterans and Military Family Caucus as part of the D.C. Democratic State Committee, and Hector is currently the Executive Director of Veterans United for D.C. Statehood, and we're glad to have these two D.C. veterans here. So before I say any more, let me say thank you for your service, gentlemen, and welcome to our show.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
So,
thank you, Senator. Always glad to be with you.
Yeah, and always glad to have you guys, too. You know, you do so much. And the one thing that I found about service people, my brother was an Air Force pilot, and I was exposed to a lot of service people in my life. And I find that they not only serve their country in the military, but they continue to serve. And you guys are great examples of that, you know, that you're still working hard to make the community a better place. So thanks for that. And let me ask you, I want each one of you to tell me a little bit about your service. Hector, why don't you go first? What was your service in the Army like?
Okay. I joined during the Vietnam War. And I went directly into the ROTC program at Kent State University. After 4 years, I then graduated and was commissioned a second lieutenant by the President of the United States and sent to my country chose to send me not directly to combat in Vietnam, but to operate a company in the Panama Canal that protected the Panama Canal. And there I served not only as a company commander, but I also, because of my language gift, I was able to take American generals into Latin America.
Well, that's great. And it's amazing that you were at Kent State, you know, with the history there. I was in high school when they had the terrible incident with the National Guard out there, and it was actually a girl from Kennedy High School, which was a high school across down the street from us, that one of the kids that was unfortunately killed in that incident. James, what about you? What was your experience?
When I came in, I started out in the infantry as a mortarman with 1st Marine Division. From there, I transitioned over to a cadre instructor, actually one of the last cadre instructors that the Marine Corps provided to the Navy up at Sub-Base Bangor teaching the auxiliary security force there so we can transition over to the Navy so they can start training their own sailors. From there, went into the reserves as a logistics person, red patcher. I was, had helicopters landing on my head as I hooked gear up underneath, went into the embark field. From there, I ended my career, retired. Let me change that. I didn't end it. I retired as a first sergeant coming out of tracks.
You were in Bangor, Maine? What did you do in the winter time?
That's an often misconception. I was in Bangor, Washington.
Bangor, Washington.
Well, it's actually Bremerton, Washington, but they call it Sub-Base Bangor.
But that's got to be just as cold, right, up there in the wintertime. Anyway, thanks, guys, for you both had distinguished service, and I've worked with you here in Washington, and I know you to both be just the greatest guys, and you work so hard for us. So tell me, both of you, in your own words, again, maybe Hector first, what does Veterans Day mean to you? What does this day mean to you?
Veterans Day, to me, means a day to celebrate freedom for our country. Because without the veterans there to honor America's freedom, we would be in dire trouble as a nation. So veterans, to me, means freedom. I, as a veteran, am responsible for the freedom of the United States.
Well, that's why we thank you, because that's exactly right. We all know that freedom isn't free, and it's paid for by brave men and women who serve like you and James. So, James, what does this day mean to you?
This is a great opportunity to recognize not only the veterans, because a lot of times we forget about family members, or I should actually say we don't speak a lot about the family members and the caregivers that support us and hold us up. So it's a holistic opportunity to acknowledge all the sacrifices that not only the veterans, but the family and caregivers have gone through. And like Hector said, this is also a recognition of the freedoms that we're fighting for.
Well, first of all, let me say you bring up an excellent point, James, because I remember watching my sister-in-law go all over the world chasing my brother. You know, she had to move. He was stationed in London for a while, so she had to move her whole family to London, and they had kids, and they had to work all that out. And then he was stationed at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. She had to move her whole family there. Then ultimately was stationed at Montgomery, Alabama, at Maxwell Air Force Base. And she had to move her whole whole family there. She was a hairdresser, so she never really got to do that in life because she could never build a following. She was never in one place for long enough, you know. And this woman did everything to help my brother make ends meet and raise her family. I mean, she delivered newspapers. She worked a night shift at, the overnight shift at Denny's. She was, you know, they sacrificed just as much. So that's really, really important. And Hector, let me ask you, we seem to have lost that sense of patriotism in America these days. It's not what it used to be. I remember that we used to, there used to be a thing called being an American that we were all real proud of. And it seems to me that there's less and less of that these days. Do you feel the same?
I feel so honored to be an American citizen and to have the responsibility which I carry. Even after my active duty as an American citizen, I feel that the United States is a work in process. And people have to understand there's changes, nothing is static in life, and no nation is static. There's always changes this country has. And so I believe that the American people have to understand that the process of being an American citizen is something that is continuous. It is a commitment that you make to freedom, as I said before. And so I am just very honored to have served with people like James in our military service, to honor. And I think that sometimes new generations have a concept about America, but the one fundamental thing is that America is about freedom. We are America's first patriots, by the way, in Washington, D.C.
Well, and you know, am I wrong about this, Hector, or did you grow up in Puerto Rico? Did you grow up in Puerto Rico?
Actually, I came from Puerto Rico at the age of 7, and I grew up in Ohio, and then I went to Kent State University. But I came to Washington, D.C. in 1968.
Yeah, and that, you know, and it's how ironic, you know, that you're from Puerto Rico, and now you're in the District of Columbia. We're all citizens. The Puerto Ricans have been citizens from the early 1900s, over 100 years, and we've certainly been citizens for 200 years, and neither one of us has our rights as citizens.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, yeah. And we'll get on to that. We'll get on to that in a second. But what do you think? Because it really bothers me. You know, I think to myself, I'm an orphan. I was orphaned at the age of 15. I dropped out of high school. I threw my life away. People interceded on my behalf and gave me a second chance. And I went to school, got a GED, worked my way through college and graduate school, ended up with a master's degree, started my own business, ended up getting elected to public office. And I say to myself all the time, this is the only country in which that could have happened. I think that, you know, you don't get a second chance in a lot of places. A lot of places you don't even get a first chance. So it bothers me to see that there are people out there that I don't think feel the same honor that you feel, Hector, and that I feel. How about you, James? What do you think? You think we're any less patriotic than we used to be?
Well, when you talk about patriotism, there's two ways of looking at it, and especially when you couple it with freedom. Hector brings up a great point in that our society, the United States, is fluid. So when you talk about patriotism, and freedom, you can say that the military has done their job and allowed for society to make a decision on how they want to honor veterans, honor patriotism, and things like that. And here I'm going to put in a quick plug for my VFW post, Brigadier General McGee, post 341. And all VFW posts, matter of fact, we have essays that is called Patriot Pen. And the essence of it is to have youth write about various topics dealing with patriotism. So we still are planting the seeds in our youth about patriotism. Now, how they choose to harvest those seeds is something that goes into the freedom that we have fought for and that we have ensured that the American society can enjoy.
Well, that's a great idea. And how do people get involved in that, James? Is there a website or something they go to find out about it?
See, now you put me on spot, Mike.
That's okay.
This is the problem. You start plugging. You got to be ready to keep going. If you look up VFW, I believe it's VFW.org, and you go onto that website, It will provide you with a lot of information on how to get the youth involved with the essays with Patriot Pen. We also do things with the Boy Scouts. We have Teacher of the Year, law enforcement and EMS folks of the year, a lot of different things that we do as far as community and trying to stay plugged in as far as what we do in the service for those who are still serving as well as the veterans.
Well, and let me just say, you brought up you and Hector, I think, have both used the word honored. And, you know, that's the sense I always got from my brother, who was a career military officer, was that he was always honored. He was always honored by the people that he served with. Veterans are very special people. And if you don't have veterans involved in your life, you should go out and get some involved in your life, because they're amazing, amazing people. So, Hector, tell me, what's going on these days with veterans for DC statehood? I know you guys do a lot, and you know where we stand. We stand that we've gotten this, which is amazing to me. We've gotten this legislation to become a state passed twice through the House of Representatives. It now sits in the Senate with companion legislation, and there's about 45 co-sponsors on the bill in the Senate. So are you guys doing anything currently with statehood?
Yes. Well, as a matter of fact, what we're doing now is we're gathering, you know, there's over about 30,000 veterans that live in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And, you know, we established on the 2017, you know, Veterans United for D.C. Statehood. So we're engaging veterans in D.C. And by the way, Michael, across the nation, we have named a national coordinator, so that we can have veterans around the country join our ranks in support of the right of D.C. residents to be fully represented in the Congress of the United States. So we are now looking to meet with the Veterans Committee in the Congress, and at some point we would be honored to testify before the entire Congress about how our veterans feel about living in Washington, D.C. And I'm pretty rough with it. I say that we are political prisoners in the very capital of freedom.
Well, you know, I think you've got a point, and you certainly, you know, you guys have paid a serious price for your equal citizenship by serving. And certainly veterans are really among our strongest argument. It's very hard to say that someone who served their country shouldn't be equal. And, you know, we've gone up with veterans before, and I think it's ironic up to the Hill before, and they're great lobbyists. And I think it's ironic that the person that wrote the national anthem, Francis Scott Key, was a D.C. veteran, and the person that wrote TAPS was a D.C. veteran and Congressional Medal of Honor winner. His name was Butterfield. He was a general during the Civil War. And, you know, that I think it's ironic that every time the flag goes up and the flag comes down, there's a Washingtonian involved, but when it flies overhead, they forget all about us. So I think it's, you know, you're doing amazing things. And I want to share one thing. I was on the mall one day. There was an event, and there were a bunch of veterans that walked by me, and I was handing out literature about D.C. statehood, and they were like, nah, we're not, you know, that's not our thing. We don't think you should be a state. And as they walked by, I said, there are 30,000 veterans in the District of Columbia who are not represented in their own government. And they turned around, all five of them turned around and walked back and asked for a piece of literature. So, you know, it's a very important point that so many have served, and they're just, they're ignored. I mean, in terms of their equal rights, it's really something. So tell me, what are you doing, James? I know that you're involved with the D.C. Veterans and Military Family Caucus as part of the D.C. State Committee. And, you know, every time we have a convention or they have a meeting in D.C., we meet with these people and they're always very receptive. So tell me, is there anything going on now with the State Committee and D.C. statehood?
There absolutely is. We have a committee that is directly involved with ensuring that we move forward. In fact, Hector, we both work together to assist. And if I may, I'm going to throw out a couple of names. Jim Barr and Andrea Thomas. They're leading the effort with the state committee, and, you know, they are real good pioneers in ensuring that people are educated and understand how they can get involved and how they can help to move forward the challenges that we're facing in the Senate to ensure that we get the representation that we are entitled to. That yeah. we must have, you know, going down range, going out and being deployed, and that have representation, that having say in who is the commander in chief. I mean, we do vote, but when you start talking about the Electoral College, and let's say that there is, cognitive is kicking in right now. But anyway, the point is we need to have full representation in order to be able to have a say of what's happening, not only to our veterans, but to those that are currently serving and those who are interested in coming into the military.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I have I'm sorry, Hector. Let me just say, I have a son that lives here in D.C., and I was subjected to the draft. And he could be subjected to the draft if they reinstitute the draft. And damn it, I want somebody from my jurisdiction to be able to represent him if he, you know, is drafted and if we decide to go to war. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Hector.
You know, if people don't understand. Even some of our veterans have to be alerted as to, you know, the service that we have provided for this country and the fact that, you know, in First World War, some 25,000 of veterans from D.C. served in First World War, and 635 died. That's more than 10 states in the nation. Second World War, we had 89,000 served with 3,839 dead. That was more than four states. Korea, 347 died, more than eight states. And in Vietnam, 243 D.C. veterans died. That was more than 10 states. And speaking about courage and bravery, we have 27 Medal of Honor winners from D.C. who have served in the military, and that's more than any state in the union.
Well, and I've got to tell you, when I had the honor of testifying before the United States Senate, that's one of the first things I said was that, you know, think of how brave our veterans, our special veterans, because they went off to the First and Second World War without even the right to vote for president. They weren't even allowed to vote for president back then, and they still served with distinction. And worse yet, you may remember this, Hector, they tried to take away our World War One memorial a few years ago.
Oh,
they
yeah.
wanted to nationalize it. It's got the names of the people that you just mentioned inscribed on it. It was paid for by school children who collected money after the First World War, collected nickels and dimes to build it. And the President of the United States was there at the dedication, along with John Philip Sousa. So it's really a part of Americana. And there were a bunch of people in Virginia that said, well, we ought to take it and just make it the National World War One Memorial, even though there is a National World War One Memorial in Kansas. and Kansas City. And so this is the kind of thing we put up with, right? Insult on top of injury. Eleanor Holmes Norton had to fight to get the D.C. flag flown along with the other state flags at Dover, Delaware, because some other came to her and said she went to pick up the body of her son, and there was no D.C. and she was from D.C. and there was no D.C. flag. So, you know, it's not even just injury. It's also insult that we suffer at the hands of these people very often. Let me ask you guys, what about our current strategy? It seems to me that our strategy in dealing with Congress is to go up there and testify. We don't put a lot of effort into reaching outside the District of Columbia. I know that you are reaching out to veterans across the country, Hector, and that's important. We've got a guy named Noah Wills. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Noah, but Noah is getting people running for office to commit to stand up for D.C. statehood. And even the ones that are losing, you know, someday a lot of them will win. And so he's generating a whole crop of people across the country that support us. But shouldn't the city be doing more? Shouldn't we be putting more money into this? What do you think?
Go ahead, James.
Go ahead, James.
Well, you know, money isn't always the solution. Sometimes, yes, things cost money. So, yes, money will be a part of whatever the actions we take. But a lot of times we need to do things at the grassroots level. We need to talk to, like you said, we need to cross over to Virginia, cross over to Maryland, go to other states, and talk to folks that have influence with their representatives so that they can call in on our behalf and use that influence to assist us in getting through the Senate. So we definitely need to leverage influence in other states and leverage the friendship that we have in other states.
Mm-hmm. And we should have a lot of friendships, right? A lot of people come to Washington, D.C. We don't do much to educate people that come from out of town, though, and that's unfortunate in my opinion. But you're right. We do have to make those connections. Let me tell you guys, somebody just sent in a question, and they want to know, I wouldn't have asked this question, but one of our listeners wants to know what you think about all this nonsense with Senator Tommy Tuberville holding up the nominations of senior members of the military as a political strategy for other things he wants. What do you think about that? I mean, they shouldn't be able to do things like that. That really,
well, you know,
yeah, go ahead.
I hate to say this, but the Republicans showed us, you know, who they are, where they just finally elected, you know, the Speaker of the House. And they wasted a lot of time and money and, you know, should have done a better job of getting themselves together. So we got people like Tuberville now, you know, interfering again. So we've got to make sure that we're more active in our nation letting people like Tuberville know what America really is like. There are some people that serve, but they're blind to what democracy really is. And they don't really understand, you know, what democracy and what America is all about. They have lost their way. And so we need to continue to go to the mat with everyone like that and show them that we believe in our country and that we're not going to put up with, you know, the blindness that is going on right now. There seems to be a movement, a more radical movement by some groups in that party to just distance themselves from what real democracy is all about.
Well, and, you know, we feel safe. You know, we have the finest military in the world, I think, and with the finest technology. And I think we take it for granted. You know, we really do. We say things like freedom isn't free, but we take it for granted that that they'll always be there to protect us. And it really does take some advocacy on our part, does it not? Anything you want to add to that, James?
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation that they try to turn the military into pawns to forward whatever political agenda someone may have. Now, the great thing about our military and something that will never change is that we are decentralized. And that means, okay, if you don't allow leadership to grow, you don't eliminate leadership. We are going to continue to function. Right. We're going to continue to be effective. So this ploy, all it's doing is hurting the individuals as far as their progression is going, but it's not hurting the military as a whole because we're going to function and we're going to do our job. And I'm just going to leave it there. I have a lot of comments that could take up the next half an hour, but I'm going to leave it right there.
Okay, and you know the thing that I find disturbing about it is where we are right now, where we've got two carrier groups. And I don't know that all our listeners understand what a carrier group is. It's not only an aircraft carrier, it's nuclear submarines, it's missile destroyers, it's a whole group of Navy ships. And we have two of them in the Middle East right now and in the middle of a powder keg. I mean, we've had strikes on Syria, right? And you know, everybody understands what's going on in Gaza right now. So it seems that this is a worst time in the world to be messing around with military leadership. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Let me ask you something. We're having a real problem in D.C. with crime right now. I think this is a problem that we see across America. Carjackings are up, murders are up, violent crime is up by over 40%. And we have a council member from Ward 8 that wants to bring in the National Guard. Do you think that's a good idea to bring in the National Guard to back up our police department?
I'll take this one, Hector.
Okay,
I'll start
go ahead.
Off with this one. No, I don't think that is a good idea. We do not need to have a military state here in Washington, D.C. But this question goes back to the importance of statehood. Let's say there is a situation, January 6th, where we do need to employ the National Guard. Well, that should be in the hands of the mayor, and that's not, until we become a state, that should be in the hands of the mayor to make that decision. We have already seen where it was a delay in being able to employ those forces, which that should not be the case. You brought up about violence that is occurring. Again, that should be in the how to deal with the violence that is occurring needs to be in the hands of the local legislators that know, understand, and live with the people that are affected by crime. Without any interference from Congress to delay any legislation or to have any say about the legislation that has anything to do with crime bills. Thanks.
Well, and look at the people that are doing it. The people that are always up there talking about how we should have states' rights and how, you know, local people should decide how to spend tax money and how to, you know, when they talk about freedom, but and how we should decentralize things, but then they try to control the District of Columbia. It's really ironic. Now, when we sent the crime bill, that leads me to talk about the crime bill. I commented that I thought it was a big mistake to send it up there. But I also, on the same day that I made those comments, put up a petition to tell the Senate not to overturn it, because it is, whether you agree with everything that our local legislature does or not, it is our local legislature, and we elect these people, and whatever bill they pass actually should become law. It shouldn't depend on the whim of Congress. The Congress is now going to overturn another couple of laws in D.C. They mess with the District of Columbia because they're allowed to mess with the District of Columbia. And you're right. Statehood is a solution for that. We have to become a state to get rid of that.
I think we should make a comparison between the crime in D.C. and many others and states that have their full representation and see where we stand.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea to do a study. I mean, we hear that crime is up in a lot of places. Things like carjackings are going down in places where in D.C. they're going up. But yes, we should look at all that. And, you know, it's amazing to me. We've had a congressman that was carjacked and a congressman that was beat up in her lobby. And these guys still don't get it. They still don't get that we need to have control over what happens in the city in order to keep everybody safe and in order to have a representative government, which we're promised. I should announce that we are currently involved in a lawsuit. I just filed an amicus brief the other day in the lawsuit. We're suing the Commerce Department because they don't include us. We're suing the Secretary of Commerce because they don't include us in the census the way the Constitution demands that they should include us in the census. So for representation. So, I don't know why, we're not getting our message across, but we really need to get it to a broader audience. You know, it really comes down to two more Democrats in the Senate. That's what Republicans stand up against. It's not for us. It's about freedom and justice. For them, it's about two more Democrats. It's as simple as that. And that's the way it's always been with statehood. But we need to do something about that. And I know you guys are working hard on it. So tell me, Hector, what's your latest idea? I know you're always having great ideas, from writing songs to coming up with slogans to all sorts of other things. So what's the latest greatest from Hector Rodriguez?
Well, I truly feel that we need to get our eyeball to eyeball with members of the Congress. I have this feeling that our veterans need a close eyeball to eyeball with members of the Congress. I would like to be facing a senator or a congressman who says that I can't be represented in the House of Representatives after I looked out for his wife and his family while I was a military veteran.
Well, and that's right. That, like I say, that's our strongest argument. I was in John McCain's office with some veterans, and his chief of staff said to the veterans I was with something to the effect of, "Hey, I'm a reservist. I know what you're talking about. I'm a reservist, and I'm going to be deployed in a few weeks." And one of the veterans said to him, "I served in the Second World War. I served in Korea. And I served in Vietnam, and I'm not the least bit impressed that you feel the right to take away our rights just because you served as well." And that's the thing. It's really hard to say no to a veteran, right? I mean, because they've done it all. So how about you, James? Are you working on anything new?
As I mentioned earlier, it's about getting the word out to the individuals that we meet on a daily basis. And for the most part, I'm in direct support of Hector. Hector is the idea guy. I stand tall beside him and try to work very hard to assist him in the things that he's putting together. But Hector, going back to you, you know, we had a march, what was that, last year, year before, when we marched down to the Capitol. We need to do that again, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And by the way, I don't mess with the Marines. They're the tough guys in the military.
Yeah,
so,
no, I know,
I always agree. I always agree with my good member of our organization, James. But we have a wide variety of talent in our veterans board, and now we're expanding our membership. Our big movement now is to expand members and get those 30,000 veterans that live in D.C. to participate. And I would like to see if we can do some type of a, demonstration to the Senate that we mean business and we want our freedom.
Well, wouldn't that be great if we could get those 30,000 veterans to come up to the Hill? Because I think that would really make a statement. Congress used to be the majority of Congress. When I first started in politics 40 years ago, the majority of the House of Representatives were veterans. That's not true anymore. I think it's more like 15% now. But wouldn't it be great if we could get all the veterans up there? Because, like I say, you can't say no to somebody that served the country, especially somebody that served with distinction, like you two guys. You know, I used to live by the Marine barracks, and I got to say that to you, James. I always felt safe in my neighborhood. There were always a bunch of Marines walking around, so I always felt like I was in pretty good hands. So
and
look.
By the way, I want to point out that we have a lot of women veterans that are in D.C. and we've got women veterans in our board, one of which is a Purple Heart winner.
Wow. Well, we have so many, like you say, 27 Congressional Medal of Honor recipients. We have so many heroes that have come out of Washington, and they've made many sacrifices, many of them without the rights of citizenship, not even able to vote for president. One of the first things that I got to do when I was elected, which was quite an honor for me, was to help the mayor give Senator Ed Brooke of Massachusetts the keys to the city. Ed Brooke sponsored a bill, was a co-sponsor of a bill, and led a charge in the Senate to pass a bill to give the district two United States senators and a member of the House that could vote, and it passed the Senate. But Brooke fought in a segregated unit during the Second World War, and when he came back to Washington, there was nothing to run for. There was no mayor. There was nothing, no school board, nothing he could run for. So he moved to Massachusetts and became a legend, you know, was a senator from Massachusetts for many, many years. First black senator elected after Reconstruction. And, you know, that's another thing. Washington, we lose good people in Washington because they go other places and become representatives. So we really do need to get our veterans face to face with those people and say, yeah, what's up? We deserve the same rights as everybody else. And somebody just wrote in and said, God bless you guys. And that's true.
Thank you.
God bless all you guys.
Well, and God bless you, Senator, for all the work that you have been doing in your career and the struggle that you have up there dealing with those members of the Congress when they don't give you the right respect that you deserve. So we're very appreciative of everything that you're doing for our city.
Well, thanks. And we met, I should point out that we've met recently. I met with Senator Angus King, who's an independent from Maine, and he's agreed to vote in favor of D.C. statehood. didn't want to co-sponsor, but yeah, that's excellent that we can get him on. And we've met with Senator Kelly's office from Arizona with his chief of staff, and we've met with Senator Sinema's chief of staff all in the last month. And you know, they're seriously considering, I think, getting on board. They still have questions, and some of the myths about D.C. You know, there's a lot of people that have misconceptions about what goes on in D.C., how much support we get from the government, and, you know, whether we should be part of Maryland or not. And so we're trying to work through these things with them. But we need to get Republicans. And, you know, I'm proud to say that we've met with Republicans. I met face-to-face with Susan Collins, and also of Maine, and she believes in retrocession. You know, this is the big, you know, this is what we call a red herring in politics, right? They throw up something that, you know, that really doesn't solve the problem, but sounds like a solution. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wrote the other day, I was thinking about, you know, who we are as veterans in D.C., and I wrote, we have spilled our blood and died for your freedom, America, in the sky with bombs bursting in air, across foreign lands, in the perilous sea. We are your loyal veterans, America, the American Eagles of Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better, Hector. That's exactly right. We are as a rule, if you look at the history of Washington, D.C., we're very patriotic here in Washington. We serve at higher than the national average. And like you say, 27 recipients of the Congressional Medal of Honor. We wrote the national anthem. I mean, I don't know how you could be any more patriotic. And go ahead.
You know what, Senator? I don't understand, you know, the ethic involved in one American telling another American that they can't be free. I just don't understand that kind of mental position.
I can't understand it either, because I believe that freedom and equality are prerequisites of democracy. And all right, I got trouble for both of you guys. Somebody just wrote in and said you both should run for public office. So get ready, guys. You know, yeah, because there's people there's people out there that are willing to vote for both of you.
I think we got enough votes in 30,000 veterans if we run some people. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Go ahead.
Well, I got a question, and I don't know if that person is able to come back in, but define which office they're referring to. Because me being as part of the D.C. Democratic State Committee, that is a public office that I did have to run for. It was on the ballot, and I must send out a shout and appreciation for everyone who voted for me and stood me up and made sure that I was able to take on the duties of that position.
Well, I'm sure that I voted for you. If I saw your name anywhere on a ballot, I'm sure I checked it off. But maybe that person will write back in and tell us what. Federal office. She wrote federal office. She wrote for federal
office. For federal office.
Yeah. All right. They want you to run against me. I don't know if that means they like you or they don't like me. I don't know. But
no.
But anyway,
that's
federal office.
I think that person is thinking of full voting representation.
Yeah. We certainly need that. Now, we're running out of time, guys, so let me ask both of you. Is there anything you want to say that I haven't asked you? Anything you want to add? Go ahead.
I think you've covered it very well, and I'll let James speak for himself, but I think you've covered it very well. What I would like to say to the people out there, you know, join our veterans movement for our freedom in the capital of the United States.
Yeah, that's a great way to end. James, do you have anything to add?
Absolutely. We're rolling into the holiday season. Our brothers and sisters that are standing on the front line, we definitely have to do everything we can to support them and support their families to ensure that while those that are on the front line are protecting us, that we are protecting their families that are standing tall for them. Thanks.
Well, that's a great way to sign off, and thank you so much. And, you know, at the end of every show, we play a song in honor of our the people that we've had on the show. And this goes out to Hector Rodriguez and to James Sidmore. Sidmore. And
that's okay.
Yeah, you know, this happens when you get old, James. Here's a song. I didn't give it to Doug before the show, so I hope he can dig it up quick. But I want to play God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood. I know that was one of Ronald Reagan's campaign songs, but it's a beautiful song, and I think it really captures the way most of us feel about veterans, that we stand up next to you and defend our country like you did. God bless you both, and I hope you have a happy Veterans Day. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
A respectful salute to you, Senator.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.